Blog Talk Radio.
Coming to you from the Blog Talk Radio studios in the heart of Hudson County. Folks, you know it's always in Union City and Weehawken, New Jersey collectively. This is Working the Marks here on Blog Talk Radio. And folks, I am New Jersey's premier award-winning journalist, the professor, Fernando Uribe, and he is New Jersey's premier wrestling analyst, the glorious PBR, joining us here this week on Working the Marks. What's going on, baby?
I'm in the laundry room right now, doing a great job, just trying to get some money sorted out. You didn't hear that from me. Are we live yet? No, we're not live?
Yeah,
okay,
we are.
Good. Oh, shit.
Stuff,
I should have said that. Anyways, hope everybody's having a great day. I'm not nervous at all.
Yeah. Folks, it's late August here. Summer's about to wrap up. Thank the Lord. I like the autumn weather myself. I like when it's a little brisk outside. The return of the NFL, the NBA soon. So
that's right.
Folks, again, make sure you always write to us. We love to get emails from our loyal, listening, and very intelligent audience. Always write to the show's inbox, workinthemarks@gmail.com. Once again, workinthemarks@gmail.com. If there's something you don't like that we say, if Pat pisses you off, tell us about it. If I piss you off, which I can't imagine why, tell us about it. You know what I'm saying? So make sure you do that, as well as making sure that you follow the show on Instagram at @working_the_marks. And, of course, make sure you also follow us on Twitter at @working_marks. And you know what? Check out our own social media as well, ladies and gentlemen, for the great PBR. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at @PatrickSKVM. And also on his Instagram, at Patty Rican, that's PaddyRican. And also check out my Instagram and Twitter. It's the same handle, at The Fernando Zone. And do welcome new followers again. And,
I love that. I got to put that over real quick. And you know I never like to put your shit over. But I got to put that over real quick. Dude, I'm imagining you on a fucking motorcycle and fucking Kenny Loggins singing fucking, you know, right into the Fernando Zone.
To the Fernando Zone. You know, but folks, also you check out Working the Marks on Facebook. A shout out to our boy D Rotten, our administrator, who does a great job sharing our content, making sure it reaches people, whether it's on Facebook. Surprisingly, we're not shadow banned on Facebook, so our stuff does get out there. Can't say the same about
because we don't
other
say stupid shit.
Platforms.
That's why.
Well, I mean, sometimes we do. But folks, again, shout out to D Rotten there for all the good work that he does here on the show. Make sure you check him out as well on his own Instagram at D Rotten. Good stuff he always puts out there on his social media platform.
We should also talk about Fancast Media. Before we dive into it, I just want to take a moment to put over D. I was with D recently on the Lucky 13 Saloon podcast. It was a great experience. Great talking to Jeff and Jamal, and as well as D. You know, they have a fantastic show over there out at Lucky 13 Saloon at Brooklyn. If any of you people are metalheads or into rock, go check that bar out. Stop on in, have a drink. Even if you're not into it, they got burlesque dancers in the front. Guarantee you're going to enjoy it. So big shout out to D Rotten and to Fancast Media. You're definitely a friend to the show, and we love the continued support.
We love D-Rotten for everything he does. We love everything D-Rotten does for the program. He's amazing, I have to say that. But, Pat, let's get into it here. A lot to unpack this week here as we are about to close out summer and the month of August here. Certainly the biggest news this week, aside from just the incredible Raw rating and SmackDown rating again, but arguably the biggest news story in professional wrestling this week was the highly anticipated unification match for the AEW World Heavyweight Championship, the interim As Jim Cornette likes to refer to the word, the interim champion John Moxley taking on the reigning at the time AEW World Heavyweight Champion CM Punk. And what a lot of people, man, I got to say, leading up to this match, obviously we saw Punk return 2 weeks ago to sort of a hero's return. The fans were marking out, obviously, a new T-shirt, you know, new merch, whatever. Kind of, you know, very similar to the shirt he had, I think, in his heel run, I think, in WWE in 2011, 2012.
That was the face run. That he went into WrestleMania 28 with that, so he hadn't turned heel yet.
Correct, yes. It was sort of like a darker gray T-shirt with a red logo on the front. And, you know, he came back, and obviously fans were clamoring, oh, he's back. You know, maybe this starts to set up the title match for All Out in Chicago, Labor Day weekend on that Sunday. But surprisingly, Tony Khan decided to put this match on free television this week. Again, we've all been reading about the backstage drama, allegedly, the dirt sheet writers, right? The supposedly the journalists of pro wrestling, say Meltzer, Sean Ross Sapp, even Wade Keller, which I was surprised because I hold Wade Keller in such high regard, was even buying into this stuff. But apparently there was a lot of drama backstage. Maybe there wasn't. But, you know, going into this match, dude, like I anticipated Punk was going to be sloppy because that's all he's shown us for many months now. But nobody anticipated this booking where it was an outright squash.
No, I don't think anybody had that planned. I mean, where do we begin, you know? I mean, like, look, as far as it goes with the Punk thing, all that's supposed to work, man. All that's supposed to work. And the most successful stuff that they've done in AEW is when they've tried to blur the lines between reality and gimmick, right? So typically when they do that, fans become a little bit more invested. They spike the rating. Especially when guys like Punk are involved or main event guys or upper card guys. Punk, to me, and, you know, to coin a phrase from people, Punk is main eventer in name only, okay? That's what he is. He's main eventer in name only. But as a performer, he is not a main eventer at all, like not even in the least anymore, at least not in this room. And I know that some people might not like that. They might not want to hear that. But, I mean, you take Punk's best match in AEW, which some might say is probably his match with MJF, and you compare it to one of his best matches in WWE, there's no difference. There's no comparison, excuse me. You can't compare his WWE run to this AEW run. This AEW run has been lackluster at the very least. He took time off from an injury that I'm quite frankly still skeptical about. Came back, you know, everybody thought it was going to be different. And he comes back, and it's the same old shit. And then he cuts that promo on Moxley on Dynamite, and he starts shooting on him, and all the marks are eating it up. But it's more of the same old shit from Punk. He's got to talk about the WWE constantly to get himself over, because that's what the fans are. Because we know the history. That's where all the bunch of basement-dwelling virgins, and we obsess over wrestling. You know, and all that other stuff. So he plays to that crap. I thought Moxley and what Moxley said was a lot better than what Punk said, because what Moxley said is a lot more realistic. What Punk said is Punk's talking about gimmick. Oh, well, you're the third best guy in the group. Like, bro, you know, you're not even the third best guy in catering. That was a great line. That was a great line. And I know that a lot of people have the blinders on, you know, have the rose-colored glasses when it comes to Punk, Cornette last, you know, a lot of other people. But you can't go by his previous body of work and compare it to what he's been doing lately, because what he's been doing lately is just incredibly lame. And I think that they know that, and they want to turn him heel. And that audience is not going to buy into him just acting like a heel and boo him. They need something more. They need something real. They need kind of a shoot angle, you know? So what are they doing? Well, Punk's difficult backstage, which has been documented for, you know, for many, many years, that Punk's a pain in the ass backstage. And they're using that to help get Punk over as a heel. Now, is that going to work? Probably. I think so. Only because that audience is naive enough to believe all that shit. But, like, you're looking at the people that are reporting it. Dave Meltzer, Sean Ross, full of Seth, Wade Keller, which I'm kind of shocked about. I'm with you there. Like, that's a little bit surprising because he tends to know better. But those two guys, namely, Sapp and fucking and Meltzer, these are two guys who reported that MJF was on a flight and blah, 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 and this, and everybody found out the MJF thing was a work. The MJF thing's been a work, okay? What makes you believe that now all of a sudden, because they're reporting it, people are going to fucking buy into it, that there's all this heat and all this stuff going on? No. They're trying to spike viewership. They're trying to do what Sean and Brett did in the late 90s. They're taking their heat, and they're trying to put it out there, and they're making it more believable. And in fairness, fans do tend to like that a little bit more. And for me as a fan, I think that's a lot more appetizing. That's a lot more interesting. You know what I'm saying? But the problem is that, you know, okay, you're doing this with Punk. It's fine. But Thunder Rosa and Britt Baker, like, come on, man. Like, nobody's going to buy that. Then you hear rumors that Jamie Hayter was mad at Rosa because Rosa broke her nose, and Rosa's hiding in the bathroom from Jamie Hayter. Rosa, who was a cage fighter, who competed in MMA, is afraid of Jamie Hayter? Come on, man. Like, no, I'm sorry. Like, I'm not buying that. So, you know, all this stuff that's coming out, people are going to buy into it. People are going to think there's something to it. But I'm going to tell you right now, right here, on Work in the Marsh with Fernando and Patrick on Blog Talk Radio and a bunch of other platforms I'm too fucking lazy to name right now, all of it's a work. It's a work. And you're going to get worked. And all these people who are on Twitter throwing Punk under a bus, not for his shitty work, not for his laziness, not for his lackluster bullshit that he's been doing lately. No, they're throwing him under the bus because, oh, he said something mean to Hangman. He didn't like what Hangman did. Hangman's a better wrestler, blah, 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 blah. Hangman's a very talented young man. Don't get me wrong. But Hangman has not been an upper card wrestler in the biggest company in the world. Punk has. So say what you will about him, but he has that. He has that. What he is now, different story. But, yeah, basically, I just think people are getting a little too caught up in the work, a little too caught up in it, and now they're kind of trying to blur the lines, I think, in a last-ditch effort to try and keep viewers around and try maybe attract new viewers to come back.
No, listen, it's amazing to me about, again, the optics and how fans have bought into this stuff. And it's amazing to me also how people get their news about this stuff. And of course, you know, I mean, obviously,
yeah,
I'm one that always talks about where we get our news from, but that's for Monday night shows. But, you know, it's interesting about pro wrestling journalism, dude. Like, we see all of this stuff where, again, and we know that we've come to learn that Billy Body consistently continues to be the best source for anything when it comes to pro wrestling. But what I find, and again,
yeah,
bro, like, yeah, listen, and you're a worker, you were behind the curtain, so, you know, you have a much more fundamental understanding about this stuff. But, like, I'm just someone, bro, that, like, I'm always fascinated or even baffled by the fact that, like, these type of journalists get the scoops that they get, because I'm of the belief that if you don't want something leaking out, you're going to make sure that it doesn't leak out. And case in point, I know that it had been talked about for a few months. You know, Johnny Gargano, when his contract expired, chose not to resign. He took some time off. He just had a baby. Congrats to him and Candice LeRae again. And, yeah, there were some whispers that maybe Tony Khan had reached out to him and Candice, and it didn't amount to anything. Fine, whatever. Bro, nobody knew about Gargano coming back this Monday in Toronto. It was nobody leaked it out for anything. So for me, it's like when whether it's Paul Levesque or whether it's Tony Khan or whether it's Scott D'Amore, whatever executive you want to name, all right, Billy Corgan, from NWA, again, if they don't want something leaking, it's not going to leak. So when I see stuff like this, it just kind of makes you wonder, like, okay, well, who's really doing their job or who is intentionally leaking stuff? Because, again, case in point, just the Gargano thing. I was shocked on Monday. I was doing work in my home office, and I'm looking at the TV in my home office. And you've been to my house, so you know the layout of my home. So you see where I'm doing work. And as soon as I heard the Gargano music, I did a double take, and I looked at the screen. I said, what? Wait, what? And that was a legitimate surprise. So when I hear all this stuff about, oh, we hear stuff in the back, I don't know, Pat. It just makes you wonder, like, executives at the very top, what they want to let leak and what they don't want to let leak. That's why, again, some of the stuff I don't like to take seriously.
No, of course not. I mean, you know, you look at WWE, right, and everybody, you know, can say, well, they've had their faults for quite some time, blah, 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 right? But when WWE doesn't want a secret to get out, they won't let it get out. they'll do everything in their power to keep it under wraps. Yeah, you'll get your occasional leaks from the dirt sheets here and there, but there's no, like, concrete proof, usually, until WWE reveals it. You know, you take Ronda Rousey's debut, for example, right? People speculated. People had heard. People had said, even went as far as saying, well, she signed, right? But you didn't know that she was there until Bad Reputation came on at the end of the Royal Rumble. And then the place went nuts, and it was great, you know? And Johnny Gargano is another prime example of that. I mean, you know, we've had tons of them throughout the years. How many times has Jericho come back and nobody's known? And Jericho just popped up, and it was like, oh, shit, Jericho's back. Great. You know? So, yeah, I agree with you. I think that that comes with professionalism. I think that comes with having dependable people on your roster, people who see the bigger picture, not people who are trying to get over with the dirt sheet writers. You know, I just heard a great interview with Road Dogg the other day, and Road Dogg was talking about this kind of stuff, you know, keeping kayfabe, keeping things alive, not revealing certain things, not tipping your hand too much, you know, and how that tends to help the overall general product. And when that pop happens, when that surprise happens, it's fantastic. I mean, even Cody Rhodes, right? Cody Rhodes last year at WrestleMania. I mean, everybody, oh, he signed, he's in, that's it, he's debuting, blah, blah, blah. And Body reported it, right? Which, again, you know, people could say whatever they want about Body as a person, his beliefs, whatever, who cares? At the end of the day, the guy delivers reliable wrestling news. And he's been right more times than not, okay? And when he's been wrong, it's been about tiny little details. But for the most part, he gets everything right. But at that time, he revealed that Cody signed, but then you had other writers saying, well, Cody might come and take over Ring of Honor, and Cody might do this, and Cody might do that. So there was a lot of inconsistencies in that. And then what happened? WrestleMania, lights go out, song hits, amazing pop, amazing reaction. Cody was a brand new wrestler, let's just say, because the way he left AEW and the way he went to WWE, and even the way he left WWE with his injury, night and day, you know what I'm saying? And I think that that stems from having people backstage that are dependable, that are professional, that understand, hey, we're putting on a fucking show here. We're not trying to get over with Dave Meltzer. We're not trying to get brownie points with all these guys, you know, who are reporting on news. No, we're a part of the show. You know what I mean? You know, even in Hollywood, you see it sometimes when people leak scripts or they'll leak like plot lines or all this other stuff, you know? And it's just like, man, why are you doing this? Like, why are you killing it for people? You know? And I think that, you know, that's what fans tend to do in these cases. And it really ruins it and ruins the experience for a lot of fans. But I absolutely agree with you. You know, people do have to be careful where they get their wrestling news from, because more times than not, you know, it's some nonsense reported by Dave Meltzer or, you know, one of his many minion jabronis. You know, or Vinny, Craig, Bobby, Joey, Zippy, Tony, Antony, and Billy Bob, or whoever, you know, like, you know, the 50 names that they have attached to their podcast, you know, and more times than not, those guys are wrong. But they're also in on it, you know, because you got to understand a lot of these guys, like, yeah, Meltzer was a part of the business back in the day, in the sense that he was a resource to the boys. And you know, hey, back in the territory days, hey, you know, Dave, I'm going up to Canada. Oh, well, I know so-and-so over here. You know, let me hook you up with them. Bam. And he would help out the boys and the girls go get bookings in different territories. And that was useful because they didn't have anything like that back then. So Meltzer was like the first guy to do that. So in a way, he was a part of the business. Brian Alvarez was a worker, right? Okay, he had a couple of matches. But Brian Alvarez understands one side of wrestling. He understands that Mark side of wrestling. He understands the indie side of wrestling, which is really just a microcosm of the bigger picture, you know?
Sure.
There's a million good wrestlers out there, but there's not a lot of great characters. And at the end of the day, people focus on the characters, and people gravitate towards the characters because that's what's going to pull them in. So these guys, I think, have just been looking for a way to be a part of the business or be a part of a major company or be involved or whatever it is. They've been looking for that for a long time, and I think Tony Khan has afforded them that. And I think Tony Khan has said, hey, you know, I want you guys to help me work the fans. I want you guys to use your dirt sheets to get my shit over, to make it look like things are going on when they're not, when they're really not. Now, do I believe that Eddie Kingston is Max Sammy Guevara? Absolutely. But that's Eddie Kingston's nature. There's a big difference. You know what I mean? There's a big,
well, no,
big difference in something.
Well, no. And, you know? And again, I think that's what is creating, I think, all of this tribalism, again, online about fans and, oh, what to believe and whatnot. And unfortunately, I think what it's done is it's also created this sort of blind loyalty now to sort of look at Punk as, well, Punk's being marginalized. Because a lot of the marks online are looking at this and saying, well, Punk's being marginalized and, you know, there's politicking backstage. I mean, you would laugh at some of the shit. You would laugh at some of the bullshit that you see on Twitter. That we see on Twitter, you know, or Instagram, or a lot of these wrestling Facebook groups that like to opine about this stuff and like to hypothesize about, you know, where AEW is. And we'll get to AEW in a little bit, you know, but in terms of the news cycle here, a couple of the good stories here to talk
about. It's ridiculous.
Today, Pat. No, it certainly is.
It's so silly, Fern. And not to cut you off there real quick, but marginalized main eventer. Think about how stupid that sounds. Marginalized
exactly.
Main eventer. How are you a main eventer and you're marginalized?
Exactly. And again, this is a guy that has gotten everything he possibly can get that he claimed, or maybe he felt deep down that Vince didn't give him when he was the champion of his company. And now Tony Khan has acquiesced to him in every which way possible. Creative control, presentation.
To his own detriment in some cases, let's be real.
Absolutely.
Yeah, to his own detriment.
You know, at least, you know, again, we're always going to have our critiques about Vince, but Vince was able to keep people in line and not let them be victims to their own devices, as they say, when it comes to presentation and booking. Speaking of Vince McMahon, obviously, another big tidbit this week, man, apparently an update was provided by a couple of different news sites, not just like, you know, Wrestling Inc. or The Observer, but a couple other sites we're talking about. Netflix apparently had put out a statement a few months back that they were going to put a halt to the upcoming documentary concerning the life of former WWE CEO and chairman Vince McMahon. Apparently that is indicated that while the project was originally reported to be canceled, it is not. It's still greenlit. Filmmaker Chris Smith attached a press release along with the director and the executive producer that apparently WWE is cooperating with the production. So WWE announced this project back in 2020. Netflix signed on right away and smartly, because let's be honest, how many great documentaries have we seen on Netflix in a bunch of different industries and sectors, right? I mean, during the pandemic, when we were home, basically shut down and home for most of the spring in 2020 and even to the fall to some extent, I mean, we lived on streaming services, Hulu, Netflix, Disney. And, I mean, I don't know about you. I think I saw literally every documentary possible on Netflix, you know, about aliens, about government cover-ups, about traffic, everything. It was hysterical about how much content we consumed. But it seems that Netflix will be moving that forward, even despite the fact, though, Pat, that, like, more and more reports are coming out about Vince's hush money deals. Not just $3 million now or up to 12. I think it's almost approaching $20 million. Now, again, marks are gonna die in a hell that, oh, well, Vince did this wrong and that wrong. None of these marks have a law degree, and neither do I, and neither do you. But I think we're smart enough to understand that, like, what Vince McMahon did ethically was wrong. But did he commit a crime? Clearly, that is not the case. And we know that there have been investigations by the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission folks, in case you're not familiar with the acronym. That investigates corporations about money and how it's utilized. We know that since stepping down, his daughter Stephanie Levesque and Nick Khan have assumed the leadership as a co-CEO. And, of course, Paul Levesque obviously has assumed McMahon's creative responsibilities, and he was named once again executive vice president of talent relations. I know Shawn Michaels, Michael Hickenbottom, was named executive vice president, I think, of maybe not live events or something else with creative. I don't remember the name exactly, but it seems like, you know, Vince is going to be, Vince's documentary is going to go full forward. There's a lot to dissect about Vincent Kenny McMahon, his rough upbringing, how he pulled himself up by the bootstraps, as they said, became one of the most noticeable billionaires in the history of entertainment and sports too. Let's be honest. I think this is a great move by Netflix. I think, listen, I think a little time has subsided. from, you know, what we've been learning about his indiscretions. You know, he was just out in Manhattan this weekend with apparently a new girlfriend. It seems like a new girlfriend. Along with John Cena and his beautiful wife. I mean, talk about upgrading from Nikki Bella. John, God bless you, bro. You definitely upgraded from Nikki Bella. Let's
say that. You know what, though? It's funny, though. They showed the picture, but I couldn't see him.
Oh.
I don't know what it was. I just couldn't see him.
Oh, God, I saw that.
I had to. I'm sorry. Dad jokes.
You know, obviously, Pat McAfee looked a little intoxicated, which was interesting. Brock Lesnar rocking the cowboy hat in New York City. You know, Vince celebrating his birthday this week. I think some time has passed already these last couple months. I think the marks who want to vilify him are going to vilify him anyway. Vince could rescue a kitten from a tree. He could help deliver a baby in a cab. He could somehow help an elderly lady across the street, pack her groceries, bring it up the stairs. Vince could do a plethora of great, noble, humanistic things. And the marks will still find a way to vilify him. So I think this is something that has gone away a little bit. Again, let's be fair. Is Vince McMahon the first man of influence and who is affluent to get pussy? No, that's not the first time. Marks online make it seem like Vince McMahon is the first man to get pussy in the history of pussy, Pat. And that's not the case.
Well, Fern, here's the problem. See, marks are obviously going to be more critical of him and him getting laid because most of them don't. A lot of these marks, you know, they're probably still living in their mom's house. Most of them probably eat their boogers or they eat somebody else's boogers. I don't even want to know what the internet bill is because, I mean, let me tell you, man, some of that porn is probably high speed, you know, and especially 4K porn, you know, it's a lot. So, I mean, obviously a lot of these people are going to criticize Vince, you know, they're going to criticize Vince because Vince is doing something that they're never going to do. But I mean, look, when it really comes down to it, like Vince was, you know, a very affluent man, very, you know, powerful man. He worked in, you know, he was the head of literally one of the biggest entertainment companies in the world. You know, a lot of these guys, they don't want to spend time courting, you know, going on dates, you know, playing cutesy-wootsy. A lot of these guys just want to get down to brass tacks. And, you know, they're trying to do what they got to do.
It's exhausting. Dating is exhausting. Courting is exhausting.
Yeah.
It is. I hate to break it to people.
But here's the thing, Fern. It's more exhausting when you don't have the time to do it. You know what I'm saying? If you have the time to do it, fine. But it definitely is exhausting. I'm not denying that whatsoever. However, when you got to make it down the next night, it's hard.
As bachelors, again, it's exhausting. And I know that this might sound misogynistic. It might sound sexist, which I know some people tend to put that label on me, sometimes unfairly. But, like, as men, like, this is something that's exhausting. So for someone like Vince McMahon, a multimillionaire, a billionaire technically, you know, a guy that, listen, clearly has not been faithful to his wife, and that's fine. That's his sin to live with. It doesn't matter to me. It doesn't affect my life one way or the other. But for Vince, again, if you're running a company, is he the first CEO or employer to have a hot chick in his company and not hit on her, or the hot girl say, hey, you know what, maybe I have an opportunity here to sort of get myself up the ladder, as they say, and decides to flirt with the boss and decides to see what they can do. Again, this happens in government. We've seen it happen in government.
Yeah.
We've seen it happen in the private sector. So I just think though, really, you know, when we think about Vince, you know, again, it's his life. He's got to look himself in the mirror and think about all the indiscretions, and that's fine. At the end of the day, he stepped down. He still controls, if I'm not mistaken, I was looking at my notes here. I think he still controls well over 70% of the voting stock in that company. So Vince is not struggling for money. I'm sure that tab on this week when he was out in the city, I'm sure nobody paid for anything. I'm sure John and his gorgeous wife and Lesnar and McAfee were there drinking, eating, and they weren't eating picadillo con carne con papa, okay? They were eating like probably nice calamari, a nice sirloin, some nice, you know, oyster. You know what I'm saying? Like that wasn't, you know.
Some good shit.
You know, that that wasn't Las Palmas on Bergen Line. You walk out, you stink of food, okay? Like, yeah, Vince is not struggling. So it'll be interesting moving forward what this documentary is going to uncover. It's certainly not going to be a Dark Side of the Ring type of theme to it, obviously, but I think it'll be very interesting. I think, listen, I think we can make the case that based on how compelling and how complex Vince McMahon is as a person, to be fair, if you're really going to do a good documentary, it's got to be almost like multi-parts. This needs to be like a five-part, two-hour each type of thing, almost like what you saw with Derek Jeter with ESPN, the 30 for 30 or other things. Like, you can almost make this 10, 12 hours. And I would argue, Pat, it's still not going to be enough to really document the life of Vince McMahon and everything he's done and what he's contributed to. Again, I don't know what the time frame will be, but I'm sure Netflix will do a good job.
Absolutely. I mean, it was my understanding, too, that none of this was ever halted. You know, some of the dirt sheets were, you know, kind of premature to report that they had kind of stopped it. But, I mean, it never really got to that point. Vince McMahon is a very compelling person, okay? Whether you love him, whether you hate him, can't stop talking about him if you're a wrestling fan.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of...
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, and there's a lot of very strange wrestling fans that hate Vince McMahon for literally no reason, simply because he didn't push the talent that they liked. And they have this blood vendetta against this guy, a guy who they've never met, a guy who's literally all he's ever tried to do is put on entertaining programming for his fans, okay? A guy who has squashed many a beef for the sake of bringing back a talent to make the fans happy. And I mean, like, a bunch of other things that, like, I mean, I can't even begin to list right now. But, I mean, like, there's people out there that hate him. And it's strange to me. It's very, very strange to me, you know?
Pat, remember, the hate is predicated on, again, the tribalism that Marks exhibit and also the fandom. I mean, case in point, I mean, you know, it might not be a comparable example, but we're both Yankee fans. And today it was announced that apparently Hal Steinbrenner made a statement that Brian Cashman will return in 2023. Jesus Christ, I'm livid about this because I loathe
Wow.
Not because Brian Cashman took money out of my pocket. Not because he didn't show up at my birthday party when I sent him an invite. No, it's I dislike Brian Cashman because, again, I don't like the way he, as an executive, runs the team of who he acquires or who he disposes of. But, again, that's the fandom in me. You know, I'm not saying that I'd be a better GM. Well, actually, I would say I'd be a better GM. But the point is that the fandom, especially for Marks in wrestling, really gets the better of them because they can just be like, you know what, I hate Vince or I hate Bischoff back in the day because he didn't push who I liked and he didn't push this angle, which is money, which is what worked. And, you know, again, in our minds, and I think that tribalism and fandom is what drives the toxicity for wrestling fans and for Mark specifically. I'm sorry, I know I cut you off there.
No. I get what you're saying, and as a Yankee fan, I'd also like to say I'm disappointed as well. But, I mean, with Vince, I just think it's a lot more visceral, man. I mean, you got to understand, even though Brian Cashman was making bad moves in the office, Brian Cashman was never, like, out there on the field, like, you know, cursing out Derek Jeter or, like, you know, suspending him from a game or, you know, trying to get him arrested, you know, or doing anything like that. You know, Vince McMahon created that Mr. McMahon character with at this, you know, really the screw job is really the beginning of it. And that heat that he had then still carries on to this day with some fans. I mean, it's insane to me. But I mean, look, at the end of the day, you know, people can say whatever they want about Vince McMahon. We've talked about it. Hell, we had a whole episode dedicated to him. But Vince McMahon, to me, is the greatest promoter to ever do it. I mean, he's also one of the greatest minds in wrestling, and he is a man who saved wrestling at one point. Because had he not done what he did in the 80s, and had he not done what he continued to do in the 90s, wrestling might have died it might have died, you know?
Yep.
And
mm-hmm.
Vince has had more hits and more stars than just about flop. Really, more hits and more stars than flops in his entire career.
Well,
okay, he's had some bad moments. Don't get me wrong.
Pat, to be fair, he's had, if we're being intellectually honest, I think this is where Mark struggled with this. I think this is where Mark struggled in the discussion. He's had more hits. He's had immensely more hits than misses. And I think fans struggle with that reality when it comes to Vince McMahon and it comes to looking at his body of work. Are there some things that, again, we've talked off the air about it, like, in the 30-something years of booking of Vince McMahon, have we agreed with every single booking decision? I have not. I know you're more inclined to do that.
I have not.
For reasons we can articulate on another episode. But, again, we can go back and forth on that. But the thing, though, about Vince now, it'll be interesting, again, since he stepped down, how this documentary is going to portray him. And I'm sure, listen, they're working with WWE. This is not Vice. It's not Dark Side of the Ring. You're not going to be getting – you know, salty ex-employees that want to just throw Vince under the bus. Like, this is going to be, for all intents and purposes, probably going to be an extension of what we're seeing with A&E, which, by the way, these Legends biographies and these Rivals series these last few Sundays have been amazing. Going back to last year, I mean, I think they're very well done.
Mm-hmm.
I wish they were a little bit longer than 2 hours, because I think sometimes there are some personalities that merit, I mean, I'm not saying you want to make this 6 hours. I mean, Jesus Christ, but sometimes I think 2 hours does a disservice, especially with commercials and everything. You know, if you gave me a solid commercial for 3 hours, I think that would be great for a lot of these specials, even ones that I haven't liked, like Lex Luger and the Bellas and Goldberg. I mean, I like substance. Again, because I'm such, I think it's more the academic in me. I like so much specificity that, like, I don't care how long something is in terms of a documentary, its duration. I just want, like, specificity and detail. I think that's what a lot of fans like. Now, again, transition away from Vince, though, Pat. I mean, we're looking at some numbers here.
That's, by the way, that's a nice word. That's a nice word, specificity. I would like to say that is the word of the day on Working the Marks today, specificity. The professor has provided you a word of the day. So take that and run with that, Marks. Most of you probably can't even spell it because you can't read anyway. But enjoy that free lesson from the professor.
Thanks for the plug, bro. Now, again, sort of transition away from Vince for a minute, but looking at ratings here, another big week here for Raw, man. Over 2 million again. Second time in 4 weeks that we're looking at 2 million. Now, it was a little bit down from, I mean, it was up from the previous week. August 15th was 1.97. I mean, again, listen, maybe it's semantics. Should we round up and just say it's 2? Okay, if you want to say that. But again, for specificity purposes here for the discussion, you know, this past week was 2.01. Last week was 1.978. The week before, 1.957. August 1st, 2.23. And the Raw, I believe, going into SummerSlam, or I think after, the Raw going into SummerSlam was 1.9. I think for all intents and purposes, that was probably the first full week that Paul Levesque had assumed all creative control of the product. I mean, bro, forget about the demo. I don't care about demos, you know, unless you're really invested in marketing and products and consumerism. I mean, that's what that number should mean to you folks. But Pat, you know, look at these numbers here. Raw continues, never mind SmackDown. SmackDown's been in the twos for months now.
Yeah.
But Raw, aside from just the rating, Raw itself, when you look at it as a program, I mean, listen, you know, we've talked about this off the air, and I know that maybe mm-hmm. this is the mark in me coming out, but there are just some things that Paul's doing that, again, and you know, we've talked about it off the air. I don't have a crystal ball, because if I did, I'd be able to pick the Powerball numbers a lot better. But it just seems that it seems like every switch that Paul is flipping is working. It seems almost like a pitcher, every pitch he's throwing, you know, down the plate is just cutting. It's getting movement. Everything seems to be clicking. And I think Mark's sometimes get emboldened by, like, well, this wouldn't be happening with Vince. We wouldn't be seeing the U.S. title featured prominently the way it is. We wouldn't see Karrion Kross. We wouldn't see Dakota Kai. We wouldn't see Johnny Gargano appearing on Raw. We're hearing rumors that Bray Wyatt could be returning as The Fiend. Again, that's speculation. I think the ratings, I think what we're seeing in a different product on Raw for at least, a full month now, I think is really emboldening Marks to be like, oh, thank God, Paul is a breath of fresh air. How long that lasts, that love affair, remains to be seen, though, because they'll turn on Paul soon enough.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's only a matter of time. You know that. I mean, look, obviously there was going to be a difference, you know. Like I've told you before, Vince, when Vince was younger, obviously his booking was better. You know, Vince in the 80s, the 90s, the aughts, you know, hell, even the 2010s to an extent. He was still very, very good and very on top of his shit. Obviously with age, you know, you kind of start to lose touch. You kind of start to maybe veer away from what got you to the dance, so to speak. The company also changed too. The company ended up becoming publicly traded. They expanded globally. You know, I mean, it was just huge. The company got even bigger. So obviously the objectives of the company became different over time. But I'll compare Vince to another great person. You know, Michael Jordan on the Bulls was amazing. You know, well, Michael Jordan on the Wizards was still putting up 20. You know what I'm saying? You're still putting up 20, 25 a game. You're still Michael Jordan. Vince at 70-something is still Vince McMahon. You know, and whether the Marks didn't like it or not, that's whatever. But the one thing I will give Vince for sure before he left was that he made it very clear that they need to kind of go back and start picking up that demo from 12 to 18. Because that's where their biggest dip is. They have the kids. They have the little kids, you know, the John Cena crowd, you know, the Hulk Hogan crowd back in the day. You know, that was always the kid fans, you know, stuff like that, right? And, you know, they had the hardcores, people in our age demographic. You know, I just turned 38 last Monday. Wonderful, wonderful day. Nice win for the Yanks in the Subway Series and Man United beating Liverpool. You know, so I'm 38 now. You know, you're 57, you know, and, you know, our demo, we make up the demo of the wrestling audience. So we're the hardcores. We're the ones that are going to watch no matter what. We're the ones that are going to begrudgingly tune in. And, you know, we're the ones that are going to pitch a bitch and, you know, go on social media and go off about all this stuff. We're the ones that are typically going to do that. However, in that 12 to 18 demo, they had a huge drop-off. They either lost them to UFC or AEW, right? So now Vince knew this before he left, and Vince said, shit, we got to start getting a little edgier again. We got to kind of start going back to this way again. And obviously having Triple H come in, who was incredibly successful with NXT, I mean, the black and gold, you know, I still put it over to this day. You know what I'm saying? There, and even towards the end of the black and gold era, you know, right before the rebrand, dude, they were having amazing matches all the time, but nobody was watching. Because they would rather watch Jungle Boy and Orange Cassidy juggle a midget and, you know, do 75 Canadian Destroyers, you know? So they missed out on a lot of wrestling. And I guarantee you that in the next couple of years, you're going to see a lot of people revisiting those matches and being like, damn, this was such good stuff, but we were watching that other shit instead. But Vince knew this, and Vince had the foresight to see this, to understand it, and say, hey, we got to kind of change things up. Now, Paul coming in, he accelerated that because Paul – you know, Paul and Sean have always been cool. I mean, they've just always been on the cutting edge of what's cool. And, you know, whether it's through DX, you know, even in the new generation, you know, the clique in general, they always kind of had a really good understanding of what was coming and what was happening. And I think, you know, obviously we're going to see a major difference, but I do think, though, at some point, fans are going to turn. And look, here's another thing I think fans need to consider as well. Not everybody's happy backstage that Triple H is in charge. Not everybody was happy backstage when Vince was in charge. You know what I'm saying? There's people that were probably Vince people that are probably not going to get pushed now, and Triple H's people are going to get pushed. Or, you know, somebody else might get pushed. You know what I mean? And maybe they like the old system better because in the old system they were thriving. You know, there's people that like the new system because in the new system they're thriving. But I just think for the talent, they just got to, you know, do what they got to do, work out, keep a good physique, and have a good attitude, and be ready, man, because, you know, the thing about booking, and I know fans all feel like they know, you know, so much about booking, you know, some people have to win, some people have to lose. And that's just the way it is. And there's a lot of guys out there that are still losing but are still very much over. Seth Rollins is one of the most over guys in the business, one of the best guys, in my opinion, actively right now, the best wrestler in the business. Okay?
And
I give him that over Danielson right now because he's been in bigger stuff.
And he hasn't won at a pay-per-view since, I think, the beginning of last fall, basically.
Exactly, exactly. But look at how dependable he is. Whenever they need somebody to come in and put in a shift and have a great matchup with somebody and elevate somebody, he comes in and he does that. And by doing so, the fans love him even more. Shawn Michaels in the second half of his career, yeah, he won the world title, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But Shawn Michaels lost more than anything else in the second half of his career. But yet all people remember are his great matches. You know what I'm saying? They're capable of doing that. But, you know, let's not get carried away and think that it's all, you know, fantastic stuff backstage. Everybody's happy. You know, it's like Disneyland backstage. No. There's some people that are probably pissed. There's some people that might have heat with H. But there's also a lot of people that are relieved and that they're going to get their chance. And you can see right now that Triple H picked his pet projects and he bought them back because he's really convinced that with, you know, proper presentation and with their ability to put in a shift, that these athletes and these superstars might thrive.
Well, also too, Pat. I mean, again, maybe this is Mark language on my part, but again, there's no obstacle of Vince and him butting heads creatively about, well, I like this, but I like this. And at the end of the day, Vince had the final say. That's not the case anymore. So I think Paul might feel emboldened and be like, okay, you know what? I want to give, to your point about pet projects, like I want to give my best effort forward to push my people. And if they fall on their face, they fall on their face. But at least I can control this as opposed to like, remember the perception that once they got called to the main roster, that Vince didn't know how to use people, right? Didn't Dr. Uribe once say something like, oh, you know, which Disco Inferno confirmed this week, right? I know it's like one sample size, but it's like, hey, you know, bring up Karrion Kross. You think always Scarlett, you put a demolition helmet on him. It looks stupid. And a lot of fans just didn't like it. Even Disco was like, well, that was just dumb. Paul probably was like, hey, let's go with what works. Let's go at least with what looks like it works. And we'll see what happens. Karrion Kross debuts next week on SmackDown. We'll see. It's those little things that maybe fans are saying, well, you know what? Paul doesn't have to deal with Vince anymore. It's Paul's show, so either Paul falls in his face or Paul just takes the ball and runs with it. Thus far, in 4 weeks, he seems to be running with it with unobstructed.
Well, in fairness, in regards to Disco, I got to say that he's maybe a little more invested with Kross because Kross was his student. Like, he trained Kross from the very beginning.
Sure.
So obviously he's going to be very invested in him. Chris Bay, that's another guy that Disco trained. You know, and both are good workers. They are. I mean, look, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what they give you. They could give you a fucking dildo helmet. You go out there and you figure out a way to get yourself over, you're going to get yourself over. You know what I'm saying? I'm not saying that he didn't put in a shift. I think some of his issues leading to his release were something else. But as far as it goes with what he was doing out there, some people could argue that it was silly. I look at it like, hey, they're trying to market this guy like an action figure. They're trying to sell this guy as an action figure. That's the way I saw it personally. Was it as good as the stuff that he did before? No, not really. You know, it wasn't. Let's be fair. The in-ring stuff was more or less the same. You know, obviously Scarlett, you know, adds to it because she's kind of, in my opinion, the star of the equation. I also have a finer appreciation of Killer Kross now that I found out that he's Puerto Rican. So I kind of like him a little bit more. But regardless of that, I still want to see.
Folks, you got to love the cultural tribalism here, folks. I'm working the mark. You got to love it.
Hey, when Valerie Lareda is killing it on the main roster, you're going to be gushing, okay? Nobody's going to be able to shut you up. I mean, and they can't shut you up already, so imagine then, okay? It's going to be even worse. It's going to be even worse. They're going to have to get you that Hannibal Lecter mask or something. I don't know what they're going to do.
Hey, she can come take it off anytime. But Pat, to your point about talent, just another thing here on the news cycle this week, really interesting Again, gotta take this with a grain of salt. A few reporters talked about it. I'm still waiting for Billy Boddy to confirm it, but apparently there's been a lot of backstage issues in EAW recently. Apparently, PW Insider. Well, again, it's like 50-50. You either take it seriously or you don't. It's really hard to quantify how dependable they are. But apparently, Khan indicated in a backstage meeting this week, he had a mandatory backstage meeting with all the talent where Kenny Omega, the Young Bucks, and Chris Jericho addressed them after Tony did. Apparently, people are indicating that the chief legal officer, Mega Potick, emailed Nick Khan and Stephanie McMahon collectively to warn them not to tamper with AEW talent. The email reportedly was sent just before Tony Khan's talent meeting this week before Dynamite. Again, take it for what it's worth, a few different reporters, including Sean Ross Sapp, recently reported that WWE had reached out to people under contract currently with AEW. It was reported also that, again, as I mentioned, that Kenny Omega, Matt Jackson, Nick Jackson, Tony Schiavone, and Chris Jericho, why Tony Schiavone would speak at the meeting is beyond me, but addressed the locker room, I guess, for some concerns. Backstage morale seems to be an issue, whatever. But let's get back really to whether or not this is true now, whether or not Tony Khan felt the need to tell his chief legal officer to reach out to the true most powerful Khan in wrestling, Nicholas Khan, and Stephanie Levesque. What do you make of that, Pat?
I think it's hilarious. I think Tony's starting to sweat a little bit. I mean, look, I wouldn't doubt that he did something like that because he, people can say whatever they want about him. He's a little unhinged. Maybe there's a little booger sugar behind that. We don't know. I can't wait till the rise and fall of AEW comes out on Peacock or WWE Network. Whatever. Yeah. Nah, He's doing cocaine. He's skiing the slopes. I mean, his name's Tony, man. You know, he's doing his best Tony Montana. So, but at least Tony Montana had the wherewithal to, like, you know, get his good shit out there and, you know, not put his crack shit out there.
His budo.
Tony was pushing the budo. The other Tony ain't pushing the budo. He's pushing the pura mierda. But, I find it funny. I think the backstage meeting thing, maybe it did happen. Who knows? I mean, they could be working the boys and the girls. A lot of these kids, too, that they got there probably aren't smart enough to realize when they're being worked. You know what I'm saying? So there's a lot of variables to consider. But, I mean, look, dude, at the end of the day, he can meet with the talent all he fucking wants. All the blame falls on him, okay? He's the one who put kids out there on TV that were not ready for TV. He was the one who went out there and signed all these indie guys from the West Coast that had a little bit of buzz, and, you know, he thought they were going to become huge superstars because this tiny microcosm that doesn't shut the fuck up about their opinions thinks that this guy's the man, or he's it. He's got the it factor, you know? And unfortunately, now he's finding out, and I think he's been finding out, that it's not what he thinks it is. And what he should have done is what companies like Impact have done. I mean, and people could talk all the smack they want to talk about Impact. I talk a little smack about Impact, but I at least have the awareness to say, hey, Impact books things that logically make sense storyline-wise. They don't have the star power AEW does, but they have the wrestling people in place that know what they're doing. And I think that Tony Khan, from the very beginning, wanted to do what he wanted to do, regardless of how many wrestling people told him, hey, that's not going to work. This isn't going to work. That's not going to do it. This guy's tried it, and it didn't work, you know? And instead of him listening to that advice and following it, I think he's just kind of, you know, become obsessed with whatever it is he thinks he's doing and thinks it's bigger than what it is. And it's a big ego trip for him, you know? He can't blame the town. He should have had the meeting with himself, like, you know, because he's the major problem. Because he's the one who had all these superstars at his disposal, people that all the marks and all these people cried about, oh, they didn't use this guy, and he's not being used the right way. I mean, Miro. Well, Miro's played more video games than wrestled. You know what I'm saying? What's Aleister Black doing? What are they doing? They're jobbing out to some fucking jabroni crew. You know what I'm saying? What are other guys that have been there doing? Nobody's really doing anything special. Even Punk, who's technically, you know, a main eventer, he's not really doing anything special or great. It's not spectacular at all. Moxley, what? He went over there to cut his forehead open? Okay, great. You know what I'm saying? But, like, nobody that has star power is doing anything. Bryan Danielson. Bryan Danielson's wrestling lower card, guys. And granted, Bryan Danielson wants to do this. This is something that he wants to do. But it's Tony Khan's responsibility as the owner of that company and as the booker of that company to say, listen, I understand and I respect that, Bryan, but while we have you here for X amount of time, we would like to utilize you as a main eventer because that is what you are. And we want to use your star to help, you know, grow our product. But instead, nah, I'll just let you do whatever you want. So Bryan Danielson's a mid-card, lower-card guy. You know, like, what is that? All this stuff that he's going on about, he can blame the talent all he wants all day long. At the end of the day, the biggest blame falls on him. But more on that later.
No, dude, listen, you said it perfectly, I think, about, you know, when it comes to perhaps Tony being a little insecure, Tony feeling a little apprehensive, you know, again, whether or not, listen, if someone can screenshot the document or the email and publish it, that'd be great. You know, I'd love to see that, whether or not that email went out to Nick Khan and Stephanie. I would have loved, if it is true, I'd just love to have seen Stephanie's face and Nick Khan's face when they opened their inbox and saw that email. They must have looked at each other and be like, look at this fucking guy. You believe this shit? Could you believe this? Like, I think that is probably the reaction you probably could anticipate from Nick Khan. Even Paul Levesque, because I'm sure maybe Stephanie forwarded the email. Hey, honey, check out this bullshit. And look. I don't know.
I bet you any money they printed it out and put it in Gorilla. If it's real, I guarantee, because those kind of people, the way they are, especially Triple H being a wise ass, Triple H probably printed it out and put it in Gorilla so that all the boys and girls could see it, so everybody could see it, you know, because it's probably that fucking ridiculous. I mean, it's absurd. Like, look, dude, he's feeling the pressure. But like I said, we'll talk about that a little bit later.
It's interesting about, again, and what's been in the news cycle. But again, as you mentioned, you know, speaking of AEW and certainly our main event topic this week, it's not even a question, folks, because normally when we present our topics here on the show, and again, ladies and gentlemen, always write to us, workingthemarks@gmail.com. If there's a topic we don't cover that you'd like to hear us discuss and dissect, please write to us.
Yeah.
We're always open to suggestions.
No chain letters. We're not donating to solar panels anywhere in any country in the Caribbean, all right? So don't send
that's
that.
Right.
Stop sending
that's
that.
Right. That's right. No get rich quick schemes from Nigeria or anything like that. Okay, folks? So please,
yeah,
I appreciate
exactly.
it. Now, normally we ask a question on the show, Pat. We're not asking a question this week. We are making an emphatic, bold statement that is predicated in facts. AEW is in serious trouble. Okay, and folks, and what I predicate this on, and again, being a man of science, a social scientist, I'm always about data and numbers. Here are some numbers, folks, that should alarm you if you're an AEW fan, and more so the AEW apologists, which really comprise a lot of the Mark audience. Okay, I'm going to take you back, folks, and again, it's a little laborious, but bear with us here. The very first episode of Dynamite, as we're approaching the 3-year anniversary, on October the 2nd, debuted at 1.409 million on TNT. Okay, I'm not going to bother with the demo number. That's something that Brian, Vinny, Craig, Joey, Johnny, Jerry, Jimmy, and everybody else like to talk about on Wrestling Observer Live. You know, we're more intellectual on this program, ladies and gentlemen, okay? And, of course, the following week, October the 9th, it dipped a little bit to 1.018. It dipped again to 1.014. And it fluctuated for most of the rest of 2019. In 2020, notwithstanding obviously what we lived through the pandemic, we still had some, you know, high ratings. March 18th, for example, 932,000. Later during the summer, it dipped down tremendously. A lot of things going on during that year, I think, you know, television viewing probably took a hit all around. So not a surprise there. Some decent numbers in 2020. They had 1 million on September 9th, right after All Out. And I think for the rest of 2020, it was still like in the six figures when it came to ratings. Now, folks, let's go to 2021 now. Okay, and there was a span of time in the spring where 3 out of 4 weeks in April, they were doing 1.21. 1.104 and 1.09. Okay, going into the spring, fluctuating here and there. They had a really bad June in 2021. They went as low as 462,000, Patrick. Okay, that was pretty low in 2021, in June.
Wow.
You know, then it bumped up again, June 11. Now, again, folks, let's also be fair. You know, the NBA playoffs were a big, big thing on TNT and TBS, and that did a lot to alter AEW, to be fair. You know, looking at what was going on during that time, the NBA, again, after their season in 2020 in the bubble, they went back to live playoff games in 2021. That was a big thing for people. Okay, so those numbers kind of dipped. But in the summer of 2021, folks, we had 1, 2, 3, 4 consecutive weeks of over a million, 1.025, 1.14, 1.10, and then in August 4th of last year, 1.102. Going into All Out, they had, at this time last year, basically August 25th, 2021, they had 1.172. The weekend of All Out was 1.047. The Dynamite right after All Out, which arguably, Pat, I would argue All Out 2021 was their best pay-per-view ever in the history of that company.
Yeah.
And they had a 1.319 rating on Dynamite. Then it dipped a little bit to 1.175. Then for the Grand Slam show in Queens, in all the way in Bumblefuck, you know, Arthur Ashe Stadium out there in Flushing, that Dynamite did 1.273. The following week, it dipped a little bit at 1.15. It stayed at 1.05. And then it kind of really fluctuated for the rest of the year. Now, when you look at those numbers, folks, all right, and then it went, it had a right, the week of Christmas, it did a 1.02. In 2021, folks, there were 12 out of the 52 weeks, there were 12 weeks where Dynamite drew a million plus. In 2022, and again, this is the academic in me, folks, here, we're looking at only this past week with the unification match, only produced the seventh time in this year that AEW has had over a million. It has dipped down as far as 761,000 during the summer in June. It picked up a little bit, the Dynamite after Forbidden Door. Okay, but by and large, and we're approaching Labor Day next weekend. Okay, we're approaching Labor Day. We're only seeing seven instances of a million. And as they draw closer to their renewal process with TNT, and maybe they're shopping stuff around to Discovery or wherever else, a million only seven times thus far, Pat. That's concerning if you're an AEW fan, if you're an AEW executive. This company could be going under soon if they don't turn it around. They're in serious trouble. And again, folks, I hate to bore you with stats like that, but it's important to put these numbers out there to give you perspective. Because at the end of the day, these are the numbers that govern buy rates and govern whether or not networks want to dish out millions of dollars in advertising. Pat, I'll give you the floor on this.
Well, I mean, I think you've highlighted a lot of what their problems are. And, I mean, I think right now their biggest problem is that they haven't learned from any of their mistakes. Tony Khan has not learned from any of his mistakes. And Tony Khan is still under the impression that good wrestlers, just being a good wrestler, is going to draw people in and it's going to make people want to watch. But the problem is that nobody wants to watch that. And it's been proven many times throughout the history of wrestling that just being a good wrestler isn't enough to draw people. You know, I'll give you an example. Bret Hart, right, who I love Bret Hart. And I respect Bret Hart immensely as a performer, as a wrestler, as a talent, right? But Bret Hart's not the most interesting guy, right? But Vince McMahon figured out ways to make him more interesting and more appealing. Even with all of that, he still couldn't compare to a character like Hulk Hogan, because Hulk Hogan was just a character. It wasn't so much about the work. You know, he couldn't really compare to Steve Austin, because Steve Austin, even though he played a very important part in Steve's career, you know, he couldn't compare to Steve Austin because Steve Austin was a huge character. They just continue to insist that wrestling will be enough, and wrestling is not going to be enough. And the problem is that they no longer have excuses, because they have the talent available to be able to make this product bigger, to be able to consistently draw over a million, to be able to really break through into the mainstream. And other things that we've highlighted on this show before that they still continue not to do, I mean, why isn't CM Punk at a Cubs game throwing out the first pitch, right? Why didn't he do that after he won the AEW title? Albeit it was a short, brief, you know, stint as champion, but why wasn't he doing stuff like that? Why isn't Bryan Danielson going to Seattle, you know, when that sorry team opens up their season, their NFL season, and they got to sound that horn or something like that or whatever it is that they do up there? You know, why isn't he sending more people to do more things? Why isn't he taking the European stars that he has to go over to the Premier League, to go over to La Liga, to go over to other various leagues out there? You know, he has Cesaro, who's a guy who speaks, what, five languages? Why aren't you sending that guy to Germany, having him hang out in a Bayern Munich jersey, drinking beer, promoting him on the American television that broadcasts those games? Granted, they're in German, you know, it's the German league, but American, you know, companies have the licensing rights to be able to distribute that and to present that. So why aren't you doing all these little things? You know what I mean? And this is a problem, you know, sending wrestlers to the VMAs. These are things that Vince McMahon did, but for whatever reason, they don't want to do that because in their mind, they feel that that's sports entertainment. And that somehow ruins the credibility of the product. No, you numpties, it doesn't. It grows your product. It makes more people know who you are. You know what I'm saying? There's a reason why still to this day, you see athletes across various sports. I'll give you one. Israel Adesanya, right? UFC fighter. You know what he came out to? The Undertaker entrance. The Undertaker entrance. Are you going to see people coming out with the Orange Cassidy entrance, you know, when they do a fight? Or are you going to see people coming out, you know, with the Jungle Boy entrance, coming out to Baltimore? You know, no, you're not going to see that stuff because those characters are not iconic. They're not, you know, a part of Americana and pop culture. And this is a major, major problem for Tony Khan because, look, even WCW did it. And people could judge what WCW did till doomsday. But, I mean, WCW had that understanding that they're like, hey, we got to take these stars and put them out there. And the more you put them out there and the more people know about them.
And there was a reason. I hate to cut you off. There's a reason why.
No worries.
Bischoff went on the Tonight Show. Jay Leno in the Tonight Show in the mid to late 90s was the hottest watched thing in late night. Why did he go up to Dennis Rodman, who, again, was currently on the Chicago Bulls, arguably one of the best teams of all time in NBA history, during the NBA Finals? What happened? Going to fight Karl Malone and team up with Hollywood Hulk Hogan. It's these pop culture crossover things that have worked. They've worked from, let's be honest, from the WWF / into WWE, into the NWA, WCW, even AWA, even World Class Championship Wrestling, even, again, every wrestling promotion has found a way to incorporate names that mean something that help get crossover appeal. Again, listen, the VMA, to your point about the Video Music Awards, I mean, not that people really watch MTV too much anymore. It's not really what it used to be. But there, it's going to be the Prudential Center in Newark tomorrow night. Okay, great. Not my cup of tea. Yeah. I don't really care about Nicki Minaj getting a Lifetime Achievement Award. But guess what? Have AEW people there. You know, because I'm sure that Vince and Stephanie, well, at the time, I'm sure Vince reached out and said, hey, by the way, like, you know, you're in New York, again, in Brooklyn at the Barclays Center or at the Prudential. Hey, by the way, like, some of my people are available if you need presenters or if you need people to be in the audience. And guess what? To Vince, he didn't care. He's like, oh, he'd tell The Miz or he'd tell a talent. You mean to tell me that if Vince emailed or sent a text to one of the talent, hey, by the way, VMAs need some presenters. I thought of you. What do you think? You think you can fly out to New York tomorrow?
Yeah.
What do you think? Did you think that someone said to Vince, nah, I don't really feel like going to the VMAs? Of course not. They would jump at the opportunity because why? It would bring more eyes to them, to the individual person, and, of course, the WWE.
Right.
Why? The minute you see someone, oh, let me look at their Instagram. Let me look at their Twitter. Let me look at their Facebook. Let me look at their TikTok. Hopefully you're not looking at TikTok, folks, but, I mean, you know, or Snapchat. Or whatever. I mean, but guess what? Social media engagement matters. It matters. And I think that Tony Khan, for whatever reason, just you said it perfectly. He just thinks that, oh, they're wrestlers. Wrestling is what gets them over. That suffice. No, it will not suffice.
Yep. No, I agree with you. And see, like, what you just said, too, is a perfect example of it, right? You're talking about the VMAs. Okay, you don't care for it. I don't personally care for it either, right? But there's that demo from 12 to 18 that does. And when they turn it on, it's cool for them to see their favorite wrestler there, because to them, they're going to be like, oh, shit, that's my favorite. Oh, shit, that's an AEW guy. Oh, man, that's my guy. Blah, blah, blah. You know, and it excites them, and it grows the pot. And now people are going, well, who is this person? You know, and again, they'll send somebody good looking, right? Somebody intriguing looking, whether it's a woman, a guy, you know, the girl's going to be like, ooh, he's hot. You know, and the guy's going to be like, damn, she's hot, you know? And there's going to be something there, and people are going to interact, and then people are going to go look at the social media. So next thing you know, the WWE account has like what? Like over 1 million clicks now and 1 million views extra from what they already have. Why? Because people are looking because they're intrigued, because they don't know shit about it and they want to take a look at it, you know? And this is the kind of stuff that they need to do. I mean, they talk so much about the demo, right? I didn't even know what the fucking demo was until these people started talking about it. Because back when we used to watch it, when there was still competition, it was all about the rating. It was just all about the rating. That was the big thing. The demo, they knew they were going to get all that. They knew they were going to get all that stuff. That wasn't an issue. You know what I'm saying? It was about the ratings. That was the big thing, the total overall viewership ratings. And I just feel like, you know, if they want to play into the demo, like the way they want to play into the demo, then you need to do this kind of stuff. You need to do this kind of stuff. You know what I'm saying? You know, he's putting Ring of Honor. Cesaro. Look at Cesaro. This is a dude, right? Vince didn't push him. Okay, tall, muscular, good-looking dude. Kind of got the Jason Statham thing going on there a little bit, but tall or whatever. Speaks five languages. Send this motherfucker out. Have him talk to people. Have him promote your product. And more importantly, have him promote Ring of Honor. Because now people are going to see, well, what? Oh, man, you're really well-spoken. You're really articulate for a wrestler, man. Like, wow, this is interesting. Oh, what's that you have? Oh, the Ring of Honor. What's Ring of Honor? You know, and then it's all common sense promotion. I mean, like, look, we're not promoters or anything like that. I have experience in the business because I've shut the fuck up and I've listened really more than anything else. I think that kind of goes with anything, any walk of life. But I mean, I've shut up and I've listened and I've absorbed so much from sitting under so many people's learning trees. And I still don't know enough. I still don't know anything. You know what I mean? But it's the fact that, like, you know, we're looking at this and we're understanding this business for what it is. And neither you or I have a marketing degree, but yet we somehow seem to have better ideas than a dude who owns a soccer team in the Premier League, okay, and owns an NFL football team in the Jacksonville Jaguars. I mean, come on, bro. Like, how do we know more? How does he market his games? How is it any different than running a wrestling promotion? How? How is it any different? Why? Because the results are predetermined? Okay, fine. Makes it easier. But in terms of promoting your product, how is it any different? I mean, what did he do with what was the dude that they drafted? I want to call him Johnny Lawrence, but I know he's not Johnny Lawrence.
Trevor Lawrence.
What's the kid's name? Trevor Lawrence.
Trevor Lawrence.
Okay. Number one pick, right? Good-looking white boy, long hair, you know what I'm saying? Good look for America. Kind of got that Hulk Hogan thing going on in a way, right? Little Hulk Hogan offshoot, just not the huge muscles and, you know, the receding hair or whatever. But, like, this dude is a dude that, what, they put him on ESPN. They put him all over the place. They let him do all this press, all this media because he was the number one pick. Well, Tony Khan, all you have to do is treat your fucking talent like they're the number one pick. That's what you have to do. That is literally what Tony Khan has to do. Treat your talent like they're the number one pick in the NFL draft. Put them everywhere. He was doing that. He was putting this kid everywhere, and people were buying his jersey, and in fairness, I think he did pretty decent first season. I don't know how you would feel, I think he did decent. And, you know, and again, considering the circumstances and now what we know in regards to, you know, Urban Meyer and all that stuff. But he did very, very well considering, the you know, all those other circumstances. And Tony Khan allowed this dude to go out and be promoted. It's no different than what he has to do with his wrestlers. No different, except he has a bunch of number one picks to choose from. You know what I mean? He just doesn't have the one. He has a bunch of them because there's a lot of girls there that are very talented. You know, Toni Storm. I mean, again, you're trying to play to this demo, right? You're trying to play to this audience, right? You want these dudes to go subscribe to her OnlyFans. plug her OnlyFans on the program. WWE used to plug the Playboy that Sable did. They plugged the Playboy that Christy Hemme did. They plugged China's Playboy. All those Playboys, shit, they plugged Shawn Michaels and Playgirl. Okay? I mean, come on. You know, why are you not OnlyFans, whether we like it or not, however we feel about it, OnlyFans is essentially the modern-day equivalent to Playboy. It is. Okay? This is where people can go on and they can see people that they know. That's the only difference now. It's not, you know, it's not us looking at Jenny McCarthy or Carmen Electra. No, no, no. It's, you know, hey, that chick up the block that's got the nice posterior. I'm going to check out her OnlyFans. And, you know, if she's confident enough to do that, then she'll do that. She'll put that out there, and that's fine. But it's a service, and people are getting paid off of it, right? So if you're trying to get this demo, again, I ask, why aren't you promoting her OnlyFans? Why aren't you doing stuff like, oh, it's degrading to women? What do you mean it's degrading to women? No, she's doing it. Let's plug it. Let's make it a part of the promotion, and let's make Toni Storm the face of the division. You keep Britt Baker in the background. She's established enough good faith, whether I like her work or not. She's established enough good faith with that audience where she's a player in that picture. But promote her stuff like that. And, again, it's all these little mistakes that you look at. But, again, you don't have to be, you know, a marketing major. You don't have to be in the business for a million years. It's just common sense. It's just common sense. And for whatever reason, Tony Khan is continuing to shoot himself in the foot, you know?
I'm with you. And again, you know, regardless of however, it seems like there's some positive feedback about the game coming out, Fight Forever, which is going to be coming out during the holiday season in December. I mean, whatever the case may be about that game, you know, we've talked off the air how difficult some of these pro wrestling games continue to be. I mean, obviously, it's not 20 years ago when we're playing SmackDown Here Comes the Pain on the original PlayStation where it was relatively easy to use.
Or N64, you know.
Exactly.
No mercy,
I mean, now,
or revenge, you know?
Exactly. And again, you've been to my house, so you know the layout of how my house is in my living room. I mean, I've had to, when I played WWE 2K, whether it's like 19 or 18 or 17, I mean, I essentially have had to have my Mac open on the tip, on the middle table of the living room, you know, opening the PDF, having it opened, and playing the game with my wireless controller while I'm looking at my Mac to look at just what the controllers are. Again, maybe I'm being a little OCD.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, my retention skills are pretty good. I can remember certain things, but it becomes a complicated game to play. Like a lot of sports games, I think.
You're on the money, though, about that.
You know?
Yeah,
and
you're on the money.
And I think AEW is probably going to fall prey to the same circumstance, and I think that, again, they're going to have to do really well. People, listen, that Mark audience, not all of them like video games. I mean, sometimes you see the most obnoxious signs in the crowds, right, which you all see on Botchamania. But it's interesting because this is where AEW now, I don't want to say they're hanging by a thread, but if they don't get a good TV deal renewed, again, as they're approaching the three-year mark in October, I'm sure they've been renegotiating 4 months now. Tony Khan obviously is shopping around. But, hey, you know, again, folks, and I just gave you numbers here, okay? This is not hearsay. This is not me speculating or bloviating, or this is not Pat, you know, going on some narrative. I mean, these are concrete numbers when it comes to ratings. And if you're TNT, if you're Turner Broadcasting, and you gave $40 million in the summer of 2019, do you feel comfortable dishing out another $40 million to this company? And I would argue, again, I'm not privy to these meetings, but I would argue that if you're TNT – you may not want to do that. You might want to cut it in half and say, hey, well, you know what, Tony? Yeah, you've given us some good programming. You've given us traffic on Wednesdays when it's been the highest rated show in cable, perhaps on some weeks, not during the NBA, but during the summer months. Okay, great. But does it warrant rewarding Tony Khan with another $40 million? I would argue no, but that's me. I'm not an executive. I don't sit in those meetings. I'm not the attorneys. Trying to make a compelling presentation for or against, but if you're Turner Broadcasting, I'm sorry, you shouldn't be too enthused to be just dishing out, you know, $40 million again.
No, not at all. And getting back to your video game point real quick, you know, it's simple. And if maybe by chance somebody, Tony Khan, whoever's listening to this, I doubt it, but, you know, we're not trying to unlock a safe. We're trying to play a video game. And it feels like you're trying to unlock a safe instead of playing a video game. So let's make a simpler engine here. You know, you look at the Warner Brother Warner Brothers Discovery deal, right? You look at that merger. You look at everything that's happened. They cut what? Batgirl. They canceled a few TV shows. Titans, Doom Patrol's kind of on the line. Young Justice got canceled, which was, you know, a pretty good cartoon show. And I'm a bit of a comic nerd, more of a DC nerd. So, you know, I can tell you that, you know, this stuff is – it was interesting. It was well done. And they ended up canceling that without even thinking twice, without even batting an eyelid, okay? They were just, bam, done. So what makes you think that Tony Khan is going to get some kind of special treatment, some type of preferential treatment or compassion from these people when they cut a movie like Batgirl that, whether people liked it or not, was probably going to make a couple million bucks, was probably going to draw more people than whatever Tony Khan's doing, and they canceled that, okay? And they canceled Young Justice, which was a program that was doing good on HBO Max that had been on streaming that had 4 seasons, okay? And they did away with that. What makes you think that they're going to think about giving Tony Khan another $40 million? I think if he's lucky, he gets 20. I think they're going to cut that shit in half because he's not producing the results. And you know what? Let me not get ahead of myself here. You know what? We still have the end of the year left, right? We still have, you know, a few months left, right, before the year's up. Okay. So I don't know exactly when his TV deal is up. Well, one would assume, right, it'd probably be the new year because, you know, this. I think this might be the end of it because I don't know exactly the specifics of their TV deal.
Pat, to be fair, I think if we're looking at the logistics of it, I mean, the first episode on TNT was October 2nd, 2019. Mm-hmm. So you would – again, I don't want to assume, but I think we could maybe safely conclude that it's got to be
so we're
right
coming up on it.
Yeah, exactly. Now, okay. I'm sure they've been negotiating for months. I'm sure they're not going to – leave it for last minute like a term paper, you know? So.
Yeah. However impossible it might seem, okay? And I'm sure that they're not, that even if they did negotiate, they're probably not going to announce the official details of the deal until, you know, that specific date, whatever it might be, maybe in October, right? But Tony Khan, however impossible it might seem, still has an opportunity to kind of stave his hide just a little bit and kind of show some sort of promise going into the new year, okay? He has an opportunity to at least try and close out, you know, these months or these weeks, going into All Out, after All Out, maybe leading into October, to at least try and get at least 2 to 3 solid million viewer ratings. I know it sounds impossible based on everything that they've done now, and we don't know what's going to happen at All Out. But from what we're reading, the card doesn't really look very thrilling. I got to be honest, the card last year looked a lot better, okay? You got Jericho and you got Bryan Danielson. Jericho's wrestling as the Lionheart again. That's not the kind of matchup that Bryan Danielson needs to be in. I'm sorry. It's just not the kind of matchup that he needs to be in. But it's the kind of match that Tony Khan needs him in, because he's paying Chris Jericho a butt ton of money and he needs to justify it, right? Okay, yep. So that's one match. And then you got Moxley and Punk for the title again. Punk coming off that squash, right? Which, by the way, let me tell you something. All you AEW marks out there, all you hardcores, all you, you know, die-on-the-hill AEW hardcores, if the WWE would have booked that and then done a rematch, you people wouldn't have shut up about it, okay? So don't be hypocrites. Don't be hypocrites. That's all I'm going to say. But, you know, I'm not excited for this match. I'm not into this. I saw it already. I wasn't even into it going into it. I just felt like, well, this is a necessary evil, I suppose. They have to merge the belts. But the match itself was just, meh, very just lackluster, very flat. And then you squash him. And now you're playing up an injury, so what? If I had to kind of use my crystal ball, they're going to turn Punk heel, right? And they're going to have Punk probably cheat to win or do something like that because his leg's messed up or something like that. And that's how he's going to end up winning the title in Chicago. And somehow, some way, MJF comes back. Now, Tony Khan, if he was smart, would do all that, have MJF come back, and put MJF underneath that mask, that box, that what's-his-face is wearing, Kip Sabian, you know, kind of, and this kind of plays into their whole WCW 2.0 thing a la Dean Malenko as Ciclo Pay versus Chris Jericho for the Cruiserweight title. You have him win that thing, and you have him challenge that night, and then you reveal it's MJF, and he beats Punk for the title. Now you're going into fucking the next episode of TV hot. And people are going to be intrigued, and they're going to want to see what's up, especially because MJF hasn't been on TV in so long. And, you know, he just stole the title from Punk, and Punk's this, like, salty, bitter heel now, you know? And where does that leave Moxley now, too? You know, even though probably they'll just kick Moxley out of all that because, you know, the rankings. By the way, how are the rankings working if CM Punk's going to get a rematch? I want them to explain this because...
Well, Pat, I think, again, if I had to hypothesize this, you know, I would argue the rematch clause. Even though it was title for title and unification, I don't know. You can rationalize a lot of this.
Well, it still sucks, but I mean, but again, it shouldn't have even been at this point. They shouldn't be at this point. Their cards, on average, should be a lot better because Tony Khan could have done things a lot better from the beginning until now. Why he didn't put the title on Danielson and have him debut at All Out last year and beat Omega for the title because you knew Omega was hurt. You knew Omega was going to be out. Even though you kept him around, you had him do the favor for Hangman because you promised the title to Hangman. What did Hangman's reign do? What did Hangman's reign do for the ratings? Having Danielson come in hot, beat Omega for the title, that's cool.
I just gave you those numbers, yeah, at the start of the segment. I mean, it showed that from the last November when they had their match at, I don't know, what was it, Heavy Duty, Full Machinery,
Loaded Weapon, Dirty Laundry,
Dirty Engine, Full Gear, I'm sorry, Full Gear. I can never get past that awful name. Not that WWE has had some awful pay-per-view names, but that's Full Gear is just, it's got to be up there. Full Gear is
It's almost as good as Great Balls of Fire.
I don't know, man. I just kind of, but yeah, man. But closing this up, though, I mean, I got to tell you, I mean, AEW's in serious trouble. It's gonna be interesting to see, you know, what happens Labor Day weekend. And again, to compound the problem, the night before they have to look at what Paul Levesque is gonna produce at Clash of the Castle. That's a solid card already that you're looking at in Wales. That's and of course you have NXT Worlds Collide that Sunday of All Out. Now it starts at 4 p.m. and supposedly it might only be 2 or 3 hours, but you know, the marks might go crazy if for some reason Paul decides to make NXT Worlds Collide a 4-hour show. I don't think that's the card that they have. I mean, they haven't announced all the matches yet, but I don't think they have a card worth 4 hours in terms of wrestling. So we'll see. I don't know. It's possible. If I were Paul Levesque, I'd start World Collide at 6 p.m. Eastern time, and I think that would just – everybody would lose their minds in the Mark community because, oh, my God, I can't believe Paul's doing this to Tony, and, you know, World's Collide is going over 8 o'clock. I don't know. I think it's going to be a very interesting, weekend of wrestling next week on Labor Day, and I think Tony Khan, again, I think, this, you know, just to perpetuate the narrative here for us, AEW is in serious trouble, and it's no longer a question mark. It's no longer us hypothesizing. It's no longer us speculating. It is now fact. We've given you numbers, folks.
Yeah.
We've given you a solid breakdown here on the show, as we always like to do. Folks, before we call it a day here on Blog Talk Radio, again, some interesting notes here. On this day in wrestling history, August the 27th, some interesting ones here. Back in 1990, SummerSlam was held at the Spectrum, one of the more classical buildings in the 80s and 90s in pro wrestling. The Spectrum was always a hotbed for the WWF at the time. SummerSlam, MMA from the Spectrum, a great card. Kerry Von Erich, God rest his soul, the Texas Tornado, debuted and defeated Mr. Perfect for the Intercontinental title in the first match of the advertised double main event, which I know you have a problem with sometimes with the wording. The Immortal Hulk Hogan defeated the Earthquake via count out. And it was a decent match, I think, for both, all things considering. And in the second half of the double main event, the Ultimate Warrior retained the WWF Championship against the late Ravishing Rick Rude. And not the most inspiring cage match, because I never liked those blue cage structures, per se. I understand they're easier to climb, but, I mean, it's also rough on the bodies from what we've heard over the years. On this day in 1995, Triple H, then known as Hunter Hearst Helmsley, made his in-ring pay-per-view debut at SummerSlam. And on this day, he pinned Bob Holly following a pedigree. On the same show, the man under the cane mask, Glenn Jacobs, also made his pay-per-view debut, Pat. Albeit the at the time, the dentist for Jerry Lawler, Isaac Yank, and DDS. And in 2000, the first ever...
The most important dentist gimmick.
That's right.
The most important dentist gimmick.
That's right.
Okay.
And in 2000, the first ever TLC tables, ladders, and chairs took place at SummerSlam that year. Great main event, by the way, the triple threat between The Rock defending the WWF title against Triple H and Kurt Angle. We've all seen documentaries. We've all seen shoot interviews about some of the interesting dynamics about that match and what happened. Edge and Christian defeated the Hardy Boys and the Dudleys to retain the tag titles. A great pay-per-view. Again, on this day, folks, in wrestling history, on August the 27th, some notable birthdays as well. Happy birthday to Sergeant Slaughter. Turning, again, let me just do some math here in my head. Sergeant Slaughter turning 74 today. The great Khali also celebrating a birthday. And he is turning, again, and just let me just do some math in my head here, folks. The great Khali is turning 50 today. And also another great wrestling superstar, and again, a woman who I think broke a lot of ground for women in the business. Happy birthday to Jazz, turning 49 today. Some notable wrestling birthdays. Pat, before we call it a week here, anything you want to share with our audience here?
On this day, I see clearly, and Tony Khan is fucked. And I think he needs to get his shit together, and I think he needs to start producing better content because AEW is going to go the way of the dodo. So, you know, hey, man, let's see what happens between now and then. But not a whole heck of a lot coming up. Child Actors will be playing September 24th again back at Cray 43 with Chip the Plug and Neon Funeral. You're not going to want to miss that one. You're not going to want to miss the pre-sales. We're going to have tons of drink deals and merchandise deals, so you're going to want to check that out. And as soon as I make that available, I will be putting that on my personal Instagram, at Patty Reekan, at PADDYRICAN, because I'm reeking of awesomeness. And give a check out to my Twitter, although that shit's dry as fuck. It's drier than Fernando's, and Fernando's is pretty dry. It's Patrick, at Patrick SKVM. That's scum. Patrick Scum. at Patrick Scum. That's my Twitter. And Facebook, I don't do Facebook because that shit's weird. But you can check out my OnlyFans where I just sit there and eat rice and beans. It's at Rice and Beans Rican, and hope you enjoy that. It's about $15 a month, and I also show exclusive pictures, holding all types of exotic vegetables and fruits and stuff like that. So, yeah, give that a look, people. And enjoy the rest of your weekend. It's always a pleasure working with you, profe. Take them home.
I got to tell you, folks, you can write to the show, workinthemarks@gmail.com. We love your comments, and we welcome your feedback. Make sure you follow the show on Instagram, @working_the_marks. Make sure you check out my own Instagram, @TheFernandoZone, when it's not being shadow banned, and also on Twitter, which surprisingly, I get away with more stuff on Twitter than I do on Instagram. And I say some really egregious things on Twitter, folks, and that has not been flagged yet, so go figure. Make sure you follow the show on Twitter, @working_marks, and certainly check out my own Twitter as well, @TheFernandoZone, for all my pithy political observations with vigor that I put out every day. Check that out as well. Make sure you check out Working the Marks on Facebook. Special thank you to D. Rotten for all of his administrator duties and and the great job that he does. And again, for D. Rotten listening to this later today, my apologies. I will make sure that for our next episode, the new theme song for Working the Marks will premiere on the episode. So you definitely want to keep an eye out for that. Folks, listen, when it comes to what's going on in WWE, AEW, NWA, Impact Wrestling, New Japan Pro Wrestling, and everything going on in the pro wrestling / sports entertainment community, nobody does it better than Working the Marks here on Blog Talk Radio. He is New Jersey's premier wrestling analyst, the great PBR. I am New Jersey's premier journalist, the professor, Fernando Uribe. And folks, every single week, nobody does it better than us because we are always Working the Marks here on Blog Talk Radio. Special programming note, It is Labor Day weekend next weekend. We're going to try to figure out how to get a show in. I'll be in Vegas for Labor Day, and I know the great PBR will be doing his thing during Labor Day weekend. We will make it a point to have a show recorded, folks, for all of you loyal listeners. But, again, we love you all, and thank you for supporting us here every single week on Blog Talk Radio. And always remember, folks, let's keep on talking.
The book,